Behold the Lamb of God who takes away the sins of the world. What a great message. You know, when we think about the church are those who have gathered together because of that message. And in churches, we have all kinds of people. If you join a group out in society, you might join a group and find that in that group, there's, you know, one kind of person. But in the church, there are all kinds of people. There are saved people, those who have trusted Christ as their Savior. There are unsaved people who come to a church and sit in on church. There are rich people. There are poor people. There are people from all kinds of nationalities, all kinds of countries. There are people from with all kinds of personalities. And when we look in a church, we see all these kinds of things happening in the church. And also within the church, there are even all kinds of age groups within a church. In fact, that's usually a sign of a healthy church. When you got older people, now notice I didn't say old people, I said older people. When you have younger people, and then you got everybody in between. Now, when all of that is true, then we need to learn how to integrate. We need to learn how to get along. We need to learn how to deal with each other. Remember, the book of 1 Timothy was written to teach us how we ought to act in the church, how we ought to live as believers inside the church. So inside the church, we're going to have older men, older women, younger men, and younger women. And we need within the confines of the church to learn how to deal within each of these groups. Also within the church, we're going to have another group of people. And it may be the group of people that, at least one of two groups of people in the Word of God, that God's heart just seems to be poured out to. They're often mentioned with orphans. But they're that group that God just seems to have a special place for, in which we ought to also. And that is the widows in a church. And in our passage, God says much about them also. So I want us to look at two things this morning. First, we're going to kind of tackle the age groups. And I want us to consider your actions, our actions, my actions, towards various age groups within the church. And let's begin with older men. Notice 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 1. It says, "Do not rebuke an older man harshly, but exhort him as he were your father." Consider your actions towards older men. Those men who are older in age than you are. The word here is elder. It's not used in the sense of a pastor, it's used in the sense of an older man. Now you may ask, what constitutes an older man? Well, an older man is anybody who's older than you. So if you find someone who's 18 and you're 12, that's an older man. If you're 30 and you find someone 40, you got an older man. Anyone who is older, not necessarily someone who is old. How are you to respond to, act to, relate to men who are older than you? Well, you notice two words are used here to explain our actions towards them. First word is the word rebuke, and the second word is the word exhort. Notice it tells us not to rebuke an older man harshly. This word, when it's used literally, means to strike, to punch. But it's used in the context here in the sense where it's often used. It has the idea that when you are verbally rebuking someone, you don't do it in a harsh manner. You don't do it in a strong manner. Kind of, you don't do it with the idea of striking somebody. The old English word chastise is the idea here. In other words, when you're dealing with a man who's older than you, you need to be careful how you relate to him and when you find that he is in the wrong. Sometimes older men are in the wrong. What do you do? How do you relate to an older man when he's in the wrong? Well, first of all, don't rebuke him harshly. But notice it says, but exhort him. The word exert means to encourage. Has the idea of coming alongside someone and encouraging them or urging them to pursue some course of conduct. So it's not the idea that you're just kind of making them feel better, but it's the idea that they've done something wrong and now you come alongside them to encourage them to get their life right. Well, how do you do that? You don't do it harshly. You don't do it in a strong rebuke. But you treat that older man as if he were your father. Now, we're living in a day and age where if you say that, sometimes, you know, if you tell someone to treat as if they were their father, you know, a lot of fathers and sons are in fistfights all the time. So if you have a hard time relating to your physical father, then I want you to think of your heavenly father. You treat that older person, and the key word would be with respect. The key idea is that you treat them very carefully because they are older than you, and there's a sense in which that when you deal with a man who's older than you, you need to do so in a very careful way. Paul's not telling Timothy not to correct an older man. He's just saying that you need to do so in a very careful way. When correcting, we need to make sure that there's balance. So how do you relate to older men? Yeah, I think we're living in a society where the whole idea of respect has been thrown out the window. You know, where I remember when I was growing up, when I was younger, when someone was older than you, you always said Mr. or Mrs., and then you called them by their name. You never, you know, called by first names. Now, for me, that doesn't matter. Those kind of things don't bother me, but as I treat other people, that's the way we grew up. You know, you treat them with respect. If you're around men who are older than you, you need to be very careful how you treat them, even when they're wrong. Be careful in your approach to older men. Well, then notice there's a second group here. It says younger men. How do you relate to younger men? Treat younger men as brothers. Treat younger men as brothers. Well, what does that mean? Well, again, younger men, sometimes if you're going to treat them as a brother, a lot of times brothers are in fistfights all the time. Or, you know, if you're a lady and you had brothers, you know, sometimes your brothers weren't real kind to you. I remember when I was younger, and my parents, when we were living in our house, they rebuilt our house. Well, when I was younger, my brothers had a game they would play, and my brother Dave is 4 years older than me, and my brother Sam is 6 years older than me. And they used to have a game that we'd play where they'd put me in a box and set me at the top of the steps and say, hey, Al, this is going to be so much fun, and then push. So, you know, when you're thinking of your brothers, the idea here is that as you are thinking of younger men, you treat them as equals. You treat them in a sense of equality. Now, when you think about treating older people, we tend to say that younger people have no respect for older people. But you know what? Sometimes older people have no respect for younger people. You know, sometimes older people see and they see a younger person, they just kind of lump them all in the same clay. Well, if you're around younger people, you need to treat them with respect. In fact, you need to treat younger people in a sense of equality as if they were your brother, equal. Not better than you, not worse than you, but as they are your equal. Sometimes you see older people say to younger people, you're just a young kid. You know, what are you ever going to tell me? How are you ever going to teach me anything? Or you kind of, you know, get the sense that you're better than them, so you kind of pull them alongside and say, you know, let me teach you a few things. We need to treat younger people with the same respect that we treat someone who's older than us. Third group. Let me be very careful how I say this third group. I'm going to say this in the spirit and help of the Holy Spirit. Treat older women, not old, older women, as mothers. Again, this would be any ladies who are older than you. Treat them as if they are your mother. Again, the idea we come back to is the idea of respect and carefulness in treating them. Tommy had a basketball game in New York yesterday, and they went in the middle of the, well, it was after the ice storm, but the ice was still everywhere yesterday morning. So him and his buddies, he's telling me the story last night when I got home. I didn't get home last night until after 8 o'clock, but when I walked in the door, he said, "Dad, I got to tell you a story." And they left the basketball arena or court, and they went out to McDonald's to get some food. And as they were going across the parking lot, this elderly lady fell on the ground. They saw her slip. So the four guys all went running over to help her. And about the time they got over to help her, all of a sudden the sirens from police cars were going all over the place. And there's two police cars there. And, the boys, kind of got nervous, wondering, what do these police think we're going to do? And they turned to this lady and they asked if she was okay. And then they finally ultimately said to the boys, that was really nice what you did picking her up and trying to help her. And then the police gave her a ride across the street to where she was going. How do you treat older women? Anyone who is older than you, you ought to treat them as if they were your very own mother. Carefulness, with respect, with caution, with wanting to reach out and help. Like you often see, it's probably going to happen sometime today during the Super Bowl. They're going to put a camera on somebody's face and some guy, some 6'5", 300-pound football player is going to yell into the screen, "Hi, Mom!" Treat women who are older than you with respect as if they were your mother. The fourth group that's mentioned here is younger women. How do you treat younger women? Well, notice here in verse 2, it says, treat younger women with absolute purity. Treat them as if they were your sister, but treat them with absolute purity. Word purity is our English word chastity. It has the idea of being conforming to the moral laws of God. Absolute purity, treat younger women. We went to the Chinese restaurant Friday night in the middle of the rain part of the storm, and a couple of funny things happened, but we were going up and down the buffet line at King Kong Restaurant on Greenridge Street, and this lady who looked, I don't know, she looked dark-colored skin, she looked Indian to me, American Indian. She was there with her husband, and they're going up and down, and she kind of yelled over to me, she said, "What is this?" And her husband kind of quick said, the titles are up above the thing, you can look there. And then she came down, and they have crawfish there. And they had the crawfish there, and there's a whole bunch of them laying there. And she turned to her husband, and she shouted over to me, too. She said, "What are these things?" Finally, someone shouted, "They're crawfish." And she turned to her husband and said, "If you eat any of these, you're not kissing me." And then we went up to pay when we were done. And there's this lady sitting there, and a guy standing there. And the lady, you can tell, is picking up an order, takeout order. And this guy comes in, and the lady says, "The guy, I think I know you." And the guy says, "I think I know you." And he said, "Are you picking up your order for yourself or for others?" I just knew in my head, okay, here we go. This guy's got a line coming. And she said, "Oh, no, just for myself." And he said, "Well, you can eat that here. You can take your bag. Why don't you come over to my table and eat with me? I do think I know you from somewhere." And he just kept going and going and going at her and trying to get her to come to his table. I almost turned around and said, "Why don't you leave the lady alone?" Treat younger women with absolute purity, as if they were your sister. We're living in a society where a lot of the idea of purity has just been, again, thrown out the window. If more men would understand this, how much better our society would be. The reality is if more women, young girls, would understand the issues of purity and how they dress and how they present themselves to boys and what they are doing in trying to win a boy, realize, young ladies, if you present yourself in a way that you're trying to attract a boy in the wrong way, then when you catch that boy, that's the kind of boy you're going to catch, and it's not the kind of boy you're going to want to be with. Absolute purity. Keep a physical relationship inside of marriage. Do it the way that God says you ought to do it, and it'll be better than you can ever imagine. Live the way God has called you to live, and you will please God with your life. Treat women with absolute purity. We see ministers falling one after another because they didn't get this. We see men and women giving in to temptation, looking at things they ought not to be looking at and thinking it's okay, or doing things and saying, well, nobody else knows, so it's okay. And even parents saying, you know, if my kids are going to do it, I'd rather they do it in my house than somewhere else. What crazy logic. That we've so given up on our children that we can't work in their lives and trust them to maintain moral purity. That we have to begin handing things out at school that'll only get them into trouble. Treat younger women with absolute purity. So if it's older men, older women with absolute respect as mothers and fathers. If it's younger women, younger men as brothers and sisters with absolute purity. Do things God's way according to God's standard. And God will bless that. Well, not only are we to consider our relationship to various ages, but a second thing this morning is we need to be concerned about the needs of widows. Be concerned about the needs of widows. As I said, I believe they have a special place in God's heart. James chapter 1, verse 27 says, religion that our God, our Father accepts as pure and faultless is this, to look after orphans and widows in their distress and to keep oneself from being polluted by the world. Everybody wants to talk about religion. You want to talk about religion? Take care of widows who have needs. Take care of orphans who have needs. Help them out. That's religion in practice. And I want you to notice here, beginning in verse 3, Paul goes on to give several instructions concerning widows. And I want to begin with the instructions concerning widows. There are five. And then he talks about qualifications for a widow's list, but we'll get to that in a minute. But five things we ought to think about as we relate to widows. Number one. Honor widows who are really in need. Verse 3. Give proper recognition to those widows who are really in need. Proper recognition means to set a price on or to value something, to honor something. To give someone a high status by honoring them, by respecting them. This means that they should be treated with high regard and that those who are in need should be helped materially. Notice those who are really in need, we ought to honor them, we ought to respect them, we ought to help them. Really in need points to the reality of the need as opposed to what is false or pretended. Timothy had to be careful he didn't misuse church funds. But he had to make sure that the church reached out to widows who were really in need. So number one, honor widows who are really in need. Number two, encourage children and grandchildren to care for their widows. Notice verse 4. But if a woman has children or grandchildren, these should learn, first of all, to put the religion into practice by caring for their own family and so repaying their parents and grandparents. For this is pleasing to God. Honor those widows who are within your family. If you are a child or a grandchild and you have widows in your family, that is your physical family, and they have needs and you can meet those needs, you ought to honor them by helping them with their needs. Yeah, I just can't imagine what it's like to be a widow. To have gone through what you have gone through and to lose that person who has meant so much to you, that to me that's just like, you know, tearing somebody's heart in half. And children and grandchildren need to be the first who step in, even before the church, and help meet the needs of that widow. They should be there to, you know, cut grass, shovel snow, do whatever needs to be done and help their mom or their grandmom financially if they can do it, but they ought to be there to help them. That's what Paul's saying here. Encourage the children and grandchildren. Far before the church ever gets involved, it is family helping family. In doing this, they're practicing their religion. In doing this, they're repaying their parents. In doing this, they're pleasing God. You know, sometimes when you're growing up, you really don't realize how much your parents did for you until you become a parent and then you have your own children. And you start doing for your own children, and you see the effort and the finance and everything else it takes to be able to take care of your kids. And then you realize all that your parents had done for you. Maybe you grew up in a home where your parents didn't do that. With all the broken homes we have in this world, and if that's you, then you know, forget directly about what your parents might have done for you and just think of the principle and go help your parents anyway. Because that's love. Number three, encourage widows to seek God's help. Encourage widows to seek God's help. Notice verse 5. The widow who is really in need and left all alone puts her hope in God and continues night and day to pray while she lives. So if you're a widow, you know, the first person you ought to turn to is God. One of the feelings that a widow has is that they've just been left all alone, and there could be all kinds of people around them, but they just feel lonely. There's something missing. They feel like they're all alone. Well, the first place you've got to go to help you with that is God. Go to God for help. You know, our world tells us when it happens, what we'll do to kind of meet your needs is we're just going to drug you up so that you don't know, you know, Monday from Wednesday, and we'll just make you go out in La La Land and feel like it's just a big blob so that you don't feel the pain. But the reality for the Christian is the place we go is to God for help. And God's help is a whole lot better than a pill you can take. Because God will help you through the problem, not help you to avoid the problem. Number four, encourage widows not to be self-indulgent. Encourage widows not to be self-indulgent. Notice verse 6. But the widow who lives for pleasure is dead even while she lives. The widow who lives for pleasure is dead while she lives. Where pleasure has the idea of luxury. To live luxuriously, to give oneself over to pleasure, to be self-indulgent. Paul literally is saying here, tell widows not to be selfish. You know, one of the problems that happens when you've lost a spouse is a very easy, very great tendency to turn into yourself and make the world begin to revolve around you. So you want everyone to comfort you. You want everyone to help you. You want everyone to be around you. And you begin to live for yourself, and yourself tends to become the center of everything that's going on. But if you've become a widow, then what you still need to do is what you did before, and that is to reach out to others. What I've noticed in life is that the more you help others, it seems to help any pain that you're going through. The more you reach out and serve others, then all the difficulty and all the problems you're facing, it just seems to mitigate that and help you and do something for your heart and soul that could be helped in no other way. So we need to encourage widows not to be selfish, not to live self-indulgent styles. Live in luxury. Number five, we need to encourage men to take care of their families. We need to encourage men to take care of their families. Notice verse 7 and 8. Give the people these instructions too, so that no one may be open to blame. In other words, if you don't follow these instructions, you're going to be open to blame before God. If anyone does not provide for his relatives, especially his immediate family, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. I want you to notice there's a switch here from talking specifically to women and talking to men. Notice the personal pronouns are all masculine. His relatives, his immediate family, he has denied the faith. In other words, the biblical truth is that the man in the relationship, the man in the husband-wife relationship, the man in the family, he is the one who has the responsibility to meet the needs of the family. Does not mean that women cannot work, but if you have children, I would encourage you to be with your kids or find creative ways where maybe you can do things but still be with your kids. But guys, you have the responsibility. And I cannot believe how many men are willing to sit home and do nothing and become slobs and send their wives out to work. Men, you have the responsibility to take care of your family. If that means a second job, it means a second job. But you have the responsibility. That's why there's all personal pronouns here. Take care of your family. Encourage men to care for their family. In fact, this word provide has the idea of looking at or thinking about beforehand. To think ahead of time. In other words, to see needs in advance and take care of them. And in relationship to widows, and remember, that's the context we're looking at. One of the things men can do today is make sure they have enough life insurance. Make sure they have funds there so if something happens to them, their wife is taken care of. I sold life insurance for a while, and it was amazing to me how many men I would come across that would say, I don't want to spend any money on life insurance. That's a waste of time. And I would say, well, why? And they would say, well, my wife can go get a job when I die. And I used to look them straight in the eye, and I used to say to them, hey, guys, forget about me selling life insurance for a minute. But when you die, and your wife's now dealing with all that she has to deal with, do you want her to now have to go out and find a job within a week or two and try to be able to pay the mortgage, pay the food, and take all those things while she's still dealing with the reality that you're gone? That's what you want your wife to have to go through? Men, one of our responsibilities as the head of the house is to lead and guide and direct and take care of our family. Notice his immediate family and then the rest of the family. And notice it says if you don't, you're worse than an unbeliever. Why? Because you know the good you ought to do and then you don't do it. And that's wrong. So five things we're told as we relate to widows that we should be encouraging in our relationship to widows. And then Paul goes even a step further, God through Paul, and he says, look, there are times when a church needs to put together a list. A list of specific widows that the church is directly involved in helping. And that begins in verse 9. Let me go through it real quick. Verse 9, I want you to notice, first of all, the requirements for being on this list. No widow may be put on the list of widows unless she's over 60. So the first requirement for being on a widow's list that the church specifically helps is that that lady who's a widow should be over 60. If you're under 60, you're still considered a young chick. But if you're over 60, you can get on that list. Notice the next requirement. She has been faithful to her husband. This word is the mirror phrase of the word used of pastors and deacons. Remember, a pastor and deacon is supposed to be a one-woman man. This word, this phrase means a one-man woman. Literally, she has been faithful to her husband. Notice also she needs to be well known for her good deeds, verse 10. And is well known for her good deeds such as bringing up children, showing hospitality, washing the feet of the saints, not literally washing, but it's a phrase used of serving others, helping those in trouble and devoting herself to all kinds of good deeds. And notice the last phrase, devoting herself to all kinds of good deeds, tells us that this list is a sample list. And it is just kind of samples or examples of a woman who's lived for God and lived for others. You say, well, what if you find a woman who's been selfish all her life, didn't care about others, didn't live for God, didn't live the way she ought to live? Should she be on such a list that a church takes care of? The answer is no. This is a special list that a church puts together to honor those women who have been faithful to God and have lived a godly life. In fact, it says in the book of Proverbs, if a man shuts his ear to the cry of the poor, when he cries out, he may not be answered. So a woman who's lived all her life and never tried to help anybody else, she's going to reap the results of the way she's lived. What Paul is talking about here basically is an honor roll list. a list of ladies that we are honoring them because of the way they've lived their life. And we are making sure that church goes out of its way to take care of. Doesn't mean it doesn't help other widows, but this is the honor roll list of widows. Well, you notice also there are some disqualifications that would keep a widow off this list. Verse 11. As for younger widows, do not put them on such a list. For when their sensual desires overcome their dedication to Christ, they want to marry. What's that mean? Well, first of all, it's talking about younger widows, so what is a younger widow? A younger widow is not an older widow. Well, what's an older widow? An older widow is someone 60 or over. So a younger widow would be someone 59 and under. So if you're under 59, you're still younger. It says, do not put them on such a list. Why? Because their sensual desires overcome the dedication to Christ, and they want to marry again. Thus, they bring judgment on themselves because they have broken their first pledge. What pledge have they broken? Some people say, well, they've broken their pledge of marriage. I don't think that's what it's saying. Some people say they've broken their pledge of God to God. I don't think that's what it's saying either. I think the pledge that it's talking about it here is the pledge to be accepted on the widow's list. In other words, let's say we have a widow who is 20. And the church comes to her and says, we want to put you on the widow's list. First of all, they shouldn't do that because she's not 60 yet. But they come and they say, okay, we're going to put you on the widow's list. And then she hits 30 and she finds another man that she gets comfortable around, that she begins to like and ultimately begins to love, and she begins to think about getting married again. Well, if she gets married again, then she has to come off the widow's list. She's no longer a widow. Therefore, she then breaks her pledge to be on the widow's list, thus bringing judgment on herself because she's broken that pledge. So Paul says, look, if you're a younger widow, don't be put on that list, that honor roll list. Wait until you get older. But if you're younger than that, don't get on that widow's list. Notice, let's read further. Verse 13. Besides, they get into the habit of being idle and going about from house to house. Not only do they become idlers, but also gossips and busybodies, saying things they ought not to say. So younger widows, because they still have the physical strength to get around, they need to be careful they don't become gossips because they have more time on their hands, because now they're no longer married and they just tend to run from house to house to house telling everybody about everybody else and becoming gossips. Therefore, if they were on the widow's list, they would dishonor all the other ladies on the list. So verse 14, Paul, so I counsel younger women to marry, to have children, to manage their homes, and to give the enemy no opportunity for slander. Some, in fact, have already turned away to follow Satan. So Paul says, look, if you're a younger widow, my counsel is, if the opportunity arises, get married. Now, it's not a biblical command that if you become a widow and you're under 60, you ought to go get married. He's just saying, my counsel is, get married. The opportunity arises, you find yourself in the right situation, and God so leads in that way, there's nothing wrong with it. Go ahead and feel free to get married. Just don't get on the widow's list and then change your mind and do that. That's why I wait, put someone on that list until they're 60. So don't put them on such a list. They should get married. Well, you notice one final thing in verse 16. If any woman who is a believer, has widows in her family, she should help them and not let the church be burdened with them, so that the church can help those who are really in need. So now Paul goes back to women again, this time though not to widows, but women who are in a family who has widows. And Paul says to those widows, look, now here's what you ought to do. If you have widows in your family and you're a lady, you need to do all you can to help that person. Help that widow in your family. That may involve, if they're in a nursing home, going to a nursing home, making sure their needs are taken care of, making sure they're not being abused, as sometimes happens in a nursing home. Or maybe that might mean taking the widow into your own home, or the widow may still be in their own home, but you're going over to their home and you're doing what you can to help them. Now, when this happens sometimes, then husbands get jealous. They say, you know, you're always with your mother. I am your husband. Well, husbands, don't get jealous if your wife is with her mother helping her, because she has that responsibility to help a widow who's truly in need. On the other hand, ladies, there's got to be balance, because remember, your husband does take priority over your mother or your grandmother. So there needs to be balance. You know, if the church functions like the church, then it won't matter if you run into people who are older than you or younger than you. You're going to treat them in the right way. And when there are people who are really in need, that's when the church needs to reach out and do what it can. After family has already done so, after the children have already done so, then those who are still in need, that's when the church should step in. Christianity is all about helping others. It's not about putting yourself in the center of life. Let's pray.